This podcast may contain language that's not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Today we're doing I Love You to Death. So if you haven't seen it and you don't want us to ruin it for you, you might want to pass on this one and we will see you next time.
Hey there, gentle listeners.
Are you ready for one dry kiss?
Yes. Welcome to One Dry Kiss, our cussy, irreverent love letter to rom-coms, where we, in the month of March, recap a singular, not rom-com, on the theme of March Madness.
We've been deviating from the theme quite a bit these last few months, but that's okay, because this is our podcast, and we can do what we want.
You know, it's kind of a rom-com. This week's actually is kind of a rom-com.
You're right, but I know that when I first, because I've never seen this movie before a couple of days ago, and quite a few moments throughout, I was like, what the hell is going on watching? Because this, of course, was your choice.
Yes. So in the month of March, we are doing movies that are based on actual things.
Mm-hmm. Actual crimes.
Yes, actual crimes. So comedies-ish that are based on actual crimes.
Because there's a whole slew of them out there to choose from. Boy, do we have a hard time deciding. I am being sarcastic when I say that.
I Love You to Death is... Okay, wait. Before we get into that, let me introduce my beautiful, glorious, smart, artistically profound co-host, Miss Tamara Cosio.
And I am here with Corinne Edding, who I do love to death. She's going to be in my life forever. It's going to be so great.
Yes.
Until one of us kicks the bucket, much like Miss Melope, our pod dog, RIP.
Oh. Look, we're just going to Thelma and Louise it, and it's going to be all good. But that's way, 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 way further down the line, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
When you have crippling arthritis and I'm on the verge of dementia. We'll just wait till then.
Exactly.
Yeah. We have it planned out. It's going to be real great.
So, I Love You to Death is based on a real-life couple.
Oh, don't tell them the ending, though, because the ending's the best part.
Well, I mean, the ending just gets spoiled, right? I mean, that's the thing.
I didn't put it in the synopsis. I didn't put the ending in the synopsis. I'm like, you have to stick around.
I have it in, like, the second paragraph, or maybe the first paragraph. You? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you do.
Yep.
Okay, well, you know what? You're going to be in suspense for a whole paragraph through my synopsis. And then in the second paragraph, Corinne's going to lay it on you.
Okay.
So you're going to have about 1.5 minutes of suspense.
Yes. Well, this real life couple had a disappointing relationship. And spoiler alert, so did I. Well, more of an encounter. I know that my dating life is abysmal, and I went out with a guy who talked about how important communication was to him, and he played multiple instruments.
Was this the soundscape guy?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
And he was a kindergarten teacher, and he also made soundscapes, which I was choosing to ignore that part until Tamara brought it up, but...
That's because you also said he would disappear off the face of the earth for months at a time. And I'm like, but does it matter if he comes back with a delicious soundscape to woo you back into his love life?
Yes, it does matter.
Oh.
He says, communication is very important. The ability to dialogue is a must. Kindness and patience. Mutuality. I have a strong distaste for double standards. I used to be a domestic violence / anger management facilitator. So I find it is very important to have, hold, and respect boundaries. Consent is also important to me. I do not disagree with anything that he's saying in this statement of his. However, when it came time for him to either let me know that he wasn't interested in me because I was actively showing interest in him, he just disappeared. So, yeah, communication was actually not on his list of strong suits, apparently.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Which was disappointing because I would say in the past close to 10 years that I've been single, I've gone out with maybe 3 guys that I've been like really interested in, and he was one of them.
Womp, 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 womp. That is disappointing. I say we go stand on his doorstep and shrilly yell that we demand answers.
Yes.
I think that's... Communication is key! Communication is key! You say that.
Oh, I had a moment like that in my early 20s where I was yelling out on the street to, yeah, a guy that...
Oh, you psychotically say anything to him?
Yes, I did.
Instead of holding up a boombox of love.
There was nothing romantical about this. It was me yelling out on the street. Oh, good times. Good times. I am so glad that I do not have all the hormones rushing through me that I did in my early 20s/teens. Oh,
now you got the menopause hormones. You're moody and you're hot.
Here's the thing about that is that my doctor was like, oh yeah, I'm going to test your hormones to see if you're like in menopause or not. And I was like, great, go for it. Would love to know. And she's like, according to the number, it's not a, like a be all and end all, but it may indicate if you're in perimenopause or in menopause. And I was like, fantastic. And she wrote me back after she got the results and she said, well, maybe you're in perimenopause, question mark.
And I was like, shouldn't she know?
It's a wide range of numbers. So basically, if the numbers are really high, then they indicate menopause. And if they're like kind of high-ish, then they could be perimenopause. But I think I was like in the probably more the mid-range than the upper, oh, you're totally in perimenopause / oh, you're in menopause range. So, yeah.
You know what's been going on in my menopause journey? Let me share it with you, gentle listeners.
Please.
So one of, you know, you're kind of familiar when you're growing up that, oh, X, Y, and Z happens when you hit this stage of your life.
Yeah.
But the one thing that I didn't know is that you have lingering and lasting belly fat, like right around your midsection, apparently. I didn't know that, but Google, my Facebook, and my Instagram kept reminding me, especially in the last 2 or 3 years. So I was like... Oh, you get stubborn belly fat and it just stays no matter what you do. Like, it's really, really hard to get rid of. And I was like, boy, that sucks. Didn't think anything of it until I've kind of been going on a mild keto diet just to lose some weight.
Yeah.
And it's been working, but I've been losing it everywhere except my goddamn middle section. It looks like I've been wrapped tightly with rubber bands in between my boobs and my belly. So it's really small there and everything in my midsection, same size. I'm like, what the fuck? It looks like somebody squeezed me like a tube of toothpaste and I stayed the same shape right in this area.
Well, maybe you're pregnant.
Oh, God, get the fuck out of here, Corinne. I cannot with you right now. The only thing I'm pregnant with is a food baby. That's because I made a delicious tamale pie, but I put too much almond flour and now it's starting to talk to me in my belly. So you're going to have to do quite a bit of editing in this episode, I'm sorry to say.
Well, I'm jealous that I did not get any of that tamale pie. So, yeah.
My stomach just went... So maybe don't be that jealous. Yeah, but it was uncanny because I'm like, usually when I lose weight, it's uniform and I kind of lose it from everywhere. And it's like everywhere but there.
And to be clear, gentle listeners, Tamara does not look like she was pregnant. That is why I said what I did, because there's no confusion. There's no confusion. She does not look like she's pregnant.
That's why I'm in tears over here. I said that my belly was kind of protruding. You just took it to the next level, Corinne.
Oh.
You really took it to the next level. I'm just kidding.
Speaking of taking it to the next level, you know who takes things to the next level?
Oh, you're talking to me? Are you asking me?
Yeah.
Oh, who takes it to the next level? Huh. I'm going to say New Kids on the Block because of their hit Step by Step, like they're going upstairs.
Ooh, baby. Gonna get to you, girl.
Step one, do you have a synopsis? Step two, can we read the synopsis? Step three, I'm going to read the synopsis.
Yes! That was beautiful. And yeah, Rosalie takes things to the next level. The character in this movie. Tamara, do you have a synopsis? Are you going to read the synopsis?
I was going to say Rosalie at first, but I was like, who has steps? Who has levels? Who has steps and levels? That's the first thing that came to my mind.
That was beautiful.
Anyways, yes, I do have a synopsis. Synopsis. Rosalie, played by Tracy Ullman, is married to her husband, Joey, played by a very tan-faced, Italian-accented Kevin Kline. They have two kids and run a dive pizza joint together. Is Joey a good businessman? Yes. Is he a faithful husband? Not so much. In fact, he fools around a lot, like multiple ladies at a time. Not at the same time, but a few different ladies a week.
Oof.
Until one fateful day, Rosalie catches him in the act, and she is heartbroken. So much so that she wants to break Joey's heart. Literally. Rosalie puts multiple hits on Joey's life and solicits help from everyone from her mother to Keanu Reeves. Does she manage to off her philandering husband? You'll have to stick around to find that out. And then wait a few sentences to get the twist at the end that I thought we were going to like hold off. But apparently Corinne already layered it lovingly into this story. We still hope you stick around for the movie, our recap of I Love You to Death. So are you ready to get started and to visit your RIP Beau River Phoenix?
River, it could have been so good for the two of us. Why? Why?
River, I could have covered you in a stream of love. Get it? An ocean of emotion.
Yes. I would have yelled outside your window. It would have been like having your very own personal stalker. Isn't that flattering? No. No, it's really not.
I'm starting to realize why you're single, if you think that's okay, Corinne.
Ahem. This is I Love You, comma, to Death. The town, Tacoma, Washington. The place, a priest's confession box. The person, Joey, played by Kevin Kline. Excuse us, gentle listeners. There are lots of bad accents in this movie. Thank you.
And bad tans.
Yeah. Confessing to a priest we never see again. He starts off, "Forgive me, Father, for I have sinned," and lists some pedestrian offenses like jaywalking and cussing out his mother-in-law in a language she doesn't understand. However, he ultimately works up to adultery. You see, he slept with 5, 7, maybe it was more like 10 or 11 women over the past couple of weeks. But we don't see how many Hail Marys the priest gives him. Instead, we cut to a screen that says, "Based on a true story," which is true. So in the marketing to this movie, they give away the ending. That is why I'm giving away the ending now. And also, so gentle listeners, you do not have anxiety like I did while watching this. A Pennsylvania wife tried killing her husband because he was a cheating cheater pants. And gentle listeners, this is not a healthy attitude to have. If you have that feeling, I suggest you go to therapy. We do not condone trying to kill anyone as a way of splitting apart. Just break up.
Unless they deserve it.
Tamara's out for blood right now, but that's okay. That's okay.
And if you want me to weigh in on it, please feel free to write into onedrykiss@gmail.com. Just put, "Should I kill my spouse?" in the heading, and I will thoroughly read your whole email and weigh in on whether or not I think you should just split up or whether you should just try to off them.
Well, in spite of the real-life wife's best efforts, he miraculously survives, and they end up staying together forever. All the spoilers early. Now you don't have to worry about someone being murdered and when they should have just gotten a divorce.
The end.
Yay! That was our shortest episode of One Dry Kiss. Thank you very much. And we bid you adieu.
Then we see Joey behind the counter in a bustling pizza place with the standard hole-in-the-wall pizza place vibe. He's tossing the dough and spinning it in the air, the obvious master of his domain. His wife, Rosalie, played by Tracy Ullman. Wait a second. So I need to go rewind back a little bit because 10 or 11 women in a couple of weeks?
Uh-huh.
That's like, ay, ay, ay. That makes me tired just thinking about it.
You know, when the ladies love you.
Weren't we just talking about that in The Sweetest Thing when he's like, "I want to go down on you every hour on the hour"? I'm like, that just sounds really uncomfortable. And so does having sex that many times if you are a lady.
Yeah. Well, he spreads his love around, though, you know, so. It's like, oh, you know, like 8 ladies.
His wife, Rosalie, played by Tracy Ullman, works there, as well as Devo, played by Corinne's first love, her childhood crush, the late, great River Phoenix.
Actually, I think my first love was Fred Astaire, but it's okay. River Phoenix.
For this narrative and story, it's River Phoenix. River Phoenix, first love. While Joey answers the phone and flirts with customers, Rosalie goes around the shop taking orders, fulfilling orders. She loves Joey, and Joey, well, he loves women. The person who does love Rosalie, specifically, though, is Devo, played by River Phoenix, who is about 15 years younger than Rosalie, has a blonde bob and a kind of hippie vibe, or a very hippie vibe. And he's holding on to the hope that Rosalie will finally figure out that her husband is a philandering no-goodnik and fall for him instead.
Mm-hmm.
The one saving grace of Joey is that he seems to be good with his two kids. They have a daughter of about 6 and a son of about 9. Or more specifically, he's a good father to his daughter because he doesn't seem to give his son that much attention throughout the whole movie.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Anywho, in the midst of the hustle and bustle at the pizzeria, Joey's answering phones, taking orders, and tossing the pizza dough. That is until he gets a call from a mystery caller, and he says in hushed tones, "Hey, baby, how you doing? Oh, no, not bad, very bad, very busy. Later on, gotta hang out, my wife's coming." As he sensually massages some dough and follows up with a loud, "Okay, bye." And about an hour after dropping by the bathroom, checking his hair, and sucking on a tube of toothpaste, he leaves to fix, heavy quotation marks, Lacey Flynn's plumbing, heavy quotation marks, at the building he owns, Villa Rosalie's apartments.
Ooh. Devo witnesses the conversation and Joey's subsequent exit, making sure to point out to Rosalie after Joey's left that this is the third time this week that Joey's gone to Lacey's to fix her pipes. But Rosalie brushes it off. Ah, she's lonely. I kind of feel sorry for her. She wipes down the counter, and when she's done, she takes a seat on one of their bench seats, flipping through a magazine in the now empty pizza shop. Devo sits in front of her, and she states, "I have eyes. I know the ladies look at Joey. He's handsome. And obviously, he looks at the ladies. He's an Italian man."
Posits. I hate that sentiment. It's okay. He's a man. He's wired to do that. It's fine.
Yeah. Particularly a specific race of man. Obviously.
Yes, Italians. Yeah. You know they're womanizers. Every last one of them.
Devo posits, "Yeah, but sometimes men do more than look." Rosalie pish poshes this. "Joey would never do that to me." Damn, you have feelings?
I just got a little water caught in the back of my throat.
Oh,
sorry.
Okay. Devo, playing devil's advocate, asks, "Say you had a dream that he cheated on you, and that dream turned out to be real. What would you do?" Rosalie quickly responds, "I'd kill myself. And if I didn't feel better, I'd kill him."
It's a good line.
Yeah.
Line. Great line.
Meanwhile, Joey knocks on Lacey's door, and she opens it, wearing a shirt. And usually I'd say pants, wearing pants. But this time, in the wise words of Tamara, she is poo-bearing it and is wearing no pants.
That's why Corinne always has to specify gentle listeners for those special times when somebody's not wearing pants and you need to know.
Exactly. Joey walks into the apartment, closing the door, and amorous noises are heard from behind the door. These are not the noises I would assume one would make while fixing pipes, unless heavy air quotes are involved around the phrase fixing pipes.
We do like air quotes around fixing pipes here, don't we? At One Dry Kiss?
Yes, sure do.
Yes, we do.
It is then more heavily innuendoed when Joey, after doing the date with Lacey, closes his toolbox, which not only contains tools, but also has condoms. You know, what every person needs in their toolbox, right?
It's a good thing that ladies don't ever fix things, because then Rosalie would get a peep at his condoms in his toolbox. Good thing men's are the only ones that can fix things, right?
That hasn't really actually been the experience in my relationship. I've usually been the
one. I'm just saying, I'm all, dude, you have like a full box worth of condoms in the top little cubby section of your toolbox right when you open it. Right when you open it. What are you going to tell your wife you use those for?
They're ribbed for your pleasure, Rosalie.
Oh, you see, I screwed on the faucet and it takes the jizz. It catches the leaks from the pipes. I just put it on the spigot before I fix it so it doesn't drip.
It's just in case we need a quickie somewhere. I always have my toolbox with me.
Oh, because it's easier to drag around your toolbox for a little sexual tryst than just have one in your wallet or your pocket.
I mean, you know.
That's going to throw the foreplay off so much if you're getting it on and your husband stops and says, hold on, baby, let me go get my toolbox. I'd have all kinds of pictures going on in my head and it wouldn't be his actual toolbox. I'd be like, oh, what kind of tools, heavy air quotes, are you going to bring back?
Here's the thing. See, the thing is, when you have the sexual needs that Joey has, if you had as many condoms as you would need to supply that, your wallet, he would need a fanny pack. He would need a condom fanny pack.
A condom fanny pack? Oh, so what actually constitutes as a condom fanny pack? Is it just a fanny pack, or is it a fanny pack with the word condoms emblazed on the front of it?
I think that it would just say ribbed for her pleasure across the front, and inside would also be a large container of lube.
Ribbed for her pleasure.
Which actually is not really for her pleasure. It's kind of chafy, just personally, but you know.
He pulls out.
I was like, baby.
It's just like going over speed bumps really fast. Sorry, continue.
So, as we said, Joey has not a condom fanny pack ribbed for her pleasure. Instead, he uses a toolbox. Since the little ladies don't fix things, they won't see the condoms inside, as Tamara pointed out.
Right. Even though Corinne and I both own the toolbox in our relationships, yes. At least have previously.
Yes. Amen to
that. I was the one putting together the IKEA furniture badly. Thank you very much.
And I was the one putting it together goodly with power tools. Thank you very much. So Joey closes his toolbox. He walks around with no pants, no underwear. Hello, Kevin Klein's ass. But still wearing his pizza apron so we don't see Kevin Klein's sweet man meat, as one is wont to call it.
His Italian sausage, if you will.
Oh, yes.
He's a pepperoni.
Okay, I was thinking like little slices and just being like, well, that's just sad.
Well, you never know what it might look like after you're sleeping with 11 or 12 women every week or so.
True that. Oof. Mm-hmm. Lacey tries convincing him to spend the night, and he scoffs, no way, I got my wife and family at home. Lacey counters, what's the big deal? You don't love your wife. And Joey is appalled. Of course I do. She's from Yugoslavia, which is next to Italy, which is basically makes her Italian. And I did a little research, because I did not know how true, not that Yugoslavia basically makes her Italian, but how true that statement was. I did a little research, and this movie came out in 1990. In 1992, Yugoslavia dissolved. So, yeah, when I initially tried looking up Yugoslavia on Google Maps, it was like, Yugo what? And I was like, no, I know it exists. I know it exists. Yugoslavia dissolved and ultimately became part of two different places, Montenegro, which is across the Adriatic Sea from Italy, and Serbia, which is landlocked, but part of its border is across from Montenegro. So, yes, where she came from is close to Italy.
I think every fucking movie that's even remotely old is the 80s, because this one was made in 1990, and I earlier said this is the 80s. Yes. Of course, the 80s. What the fuck is wrong with me? What the fuck? It's like I need to be living in the 80s or something. I don't know.
Life is a mystery. Everyone must stand alone. I hear you call my name, and it's 1990.
And that song was also in the 90s. I know that much. That evening, Joey has put the kids to bed and is looking forward to watching the basketball game.
Actually, 1989.
What?
1989.
What was?
Like a Prayer.
Oh, fucking asshole. I'm a denier. I'm an 80s denier. Everything that's not in the 80s is going to be in the 80s. And everything that's in the 90s is going to... I don't fucking know. Where am I? Who am I? Do I have feathered hair?
Yes.
That's what I want to know.
Yes.
I do.
If only. That was like my singular hair dream in the 80s was to have feathered hair.
You know, I've been having a hard time lately for various reasons.
Yes.
And this morning, this morning I was getting ready and I was just like, you know, floating through kind of an autopilot. And I took my dry shampoo down. And I have like a scrunchie like wrapped around it, and I took off the scrunchie and I was like getting ready and just doing various things, brushing my teeth and whatnot. And then I remember putting the scrunchie back on the dry shampoo and putting it on the shelf and then just going about my day. And I came home from work this evening and I looked in the mirror and I was like, man, that dry shampoo really is not working. I even brushed it out because I asked my sister. I never knew that if you use dry shampoo, you're supposed to spray it in and then brush it out.
Oh.
I would just spray it in and it would do the trick. And I'm like, right. Beautiful. It's hairspray. It needs to stay in there. So in the point of me getting ready, I brushed out the dry shampoo. And then this evening when I looked in the mirror, I'm like, that dry shampoo didn't do anything. My hair looks pretty greasy. And then I thought about it and I was like, yeah, I did all that stuff and I never actually sprayed it in my hair. Now that I think about it, I took the scrunchie off. I took the lid off. I did other things and got distracted and put the scrunchie and the lid back on and then proceeded to comb nothing out of my hair. So if I do have a little feather in my hair, that is why, because I do not know how to properly use hair products.
You know how to use them better than me, so.
If I actually can get them on my hair, I agree with that statement wholeheartedly. Anyways, Joey's going to be watching the basketball game for the first part of the evening, and then during the second part of the evening, he is going out. Ooh. You know, a man like him really works hard, so he deserves to have a good time, right? Right?
I'm sorry, does Rosalie not work hard? Question.
You know, she just takes the pizzas to the table. She doesn't actually make the pizzas like he does.
Oh, and what does she do when he's out fucking around with the ladies?
Watching their kids.
Oh, or working in the pizza place.
Or working in the pizza place. I thought you meant like on this evening. She was at home watching this evening while he went out.
He could have taken her out because, you know, there was grandma living at the house too.
Oh, that's right. Uh-huh. Dear, sweet little old granny. We're going to meet her in a little bit.
She's a delight.
Anyways, it's obvious that a man needs to go out to unwind, Corinne. Just drop it already.
Okay, fine.
Mm-hmm. And while he's out, Rosalie's going to have a little company of her own because it winds up that Devo comes over and Joey invites him to watch the game with him. But Devo has more important things to do. Continuing to try and woo Rosalie. I mean, hang out in the kitchen with Rosalie and her mom. Mama Nadja. And he did not come over empty handed. He brought over some runes. Ooh. So as Devo reads Rosalie's rune, she draws a jawbreaker-sized stone from a bag, and on it is a symbol for strength. Devo looks up the symbol in his rune prediction book and informs Rosalie, strength, the rune for replacement and renewal, suggesting that the time has come to change the life that you are now living. Rosalie is dubious, thinking this is all part of Devo's angle for her to leave Joey and run into his warm embrace. But her disbelief is interrupted as Joey calls, hey, Rosalie! Get me a beer from the other room. Devo suggests that Rosalie let Joey get his own beer, but she pish-poshes, stating that Joey works hard. He deserves it. And I don't mind taking care of him. That was my common call when I was growing up. My dad would always say, Babes, get me a beer. Uh-huh. And for the longest time, I'm like, I believe that my dad just had kids to fetch him beers and change the channel on the TV before remotes were prevalent.
I think there is something to that. And I remember that siren song of his as well. So give me a beer. So I think that I think that, and you know, you were great at it. I'm just going to say.
You weren't in my house long enough because he would have just asked anybody that was close for a beer.
Yeah.
Hey, you, kid, whoever you are, give me a beer. You in my house? You're of beer fetch age? Give me a beer.
Do you want the Budweiser or the Budweiser?
The Budweiser, please. And when Rosalie hands Joey his beer, which was a Budweiser, I didn't see, she sees him primping and discovers that he's going out. After the game, because he works so hard, he deserves some playtime. Corinne raises an eyebrow. Tamara raises an eyebrow. Rosalie doesn't raise her eyebrow, or does she say what she should, which is, what about me? I work hard. Let's go out together.
Yeah.
Instead, she asks Joey if he'll stay and spend time with her. He gets a little hopeful, asking about what they would do together. And she responds, taxes and paying bills and other paperwork. And since that doesn't sound at all like taking a deep dive on your pussy, what the fuck does he really say that? Okay, Corinne, she just loves the P word. She's slathering it all over our outlines every week. I'm going to switch it up and I'm going to say, stick the salami in the sub.
Okay.
He doesn't look like she's going to get the salami in the sub. He shakes his head and insists that he's going out. Shortly thereafter, he pops into his Lincoln Continental and drives off to the club. What married man goes to the club? Jesus, Rosalie. And being the suave man that he is, he picks up on a sweet young thing, Phoebe Cates. We never find out her name. And that's Kevin Kline's real wife, Corinne Knight. Is that right?
Yep.
At the time or still now?
They either were about to get married or just gotten married at that point. They dated for a couple of years before. He met her during an audition and was interested in her. Ultimately, he hired her ex-assistant and got the assistant to set up a date between the two of them. And she was like, hey, I'm a party girl. You know what I like to do? I like to hang out at Studio 54.
I like cocaine.
Yeah, exactly. And he's like, okay. But then a couple years later, they went out again or whatever, and they forged a relationship together.
Ah. So are they still together?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. They had a couple of kids. They're still together, and hopefully they're happy. Otherwise, she has a movie that I can show her called I Love You to Death that might give her some ideas.
Well, Joey approaches his in-real-life wife, Phoebe Cates, at the bar and immediately lays it on thick. Smarmy McSmarmington style. You must be new here, because if you had been here before, I can't even do a bad Italian accent. You must have been new here, because if you had been here before, everybody would have been talking about the epic beauty that captivated everyone in the room. She tries brushing him off, saying, I have a boyfriend. And he responds, oh yeah? Show me the fool who's making you buy your own drinks and not appreciating you for the vision that you are. She gestures to a bearded man in the corner of the club, and he's talking to a friend at their table and seems like an innocent enough looking dude, but Joey will not stand for competition.
Mm-mm.
Him? Please. You deserve so much better than him. Why are you slumming it? She goes on the defensive. Well, he's not my boyfriend or anything. I just came with him. She rests her hand on his, and the bartender shakes his head knowingly, because the next thing we know, they're on the dance floor together.
Ooh.
While they're shaking it up, Phoebe gets hearts in her eyes. And when I saw this dance scene, because we only see Phoebe for a few moments, and she's like looking at Joey off camera, and she's like, oh my God, yes, this guy. So I fully expected him to be like a banger dancer, like fucking tearing it up on the dance floor, gyrating like they're gonna get it on later. He's not.
No.
He's a terrible dancer.
Yes.
The only thing I could say about him that's positive in his moves is that he's very enthusiastic.
Yes. Just like me. I'm a very enthusiastic dancer.
No, you're a better dancer than him. And then, not surprisingly, at the end of the night, they wind up in bed together and they're doing the bed dance at her place.
Ooh. And there's nothing hotter than when a guy does the bed dance with you and then is like, okay, well, I got to go. And then books it out of there.
I know. I can't even get over. And they might be stretching it for whatever the movie's sake, but how many of the women that he's boinking in this movie are like, what about your wife and your wife? They all know that he's married and they're perfectly fucking fine with it. And I'm like, seriously?
Well, Phoebe doesn't know that that he's married, but yes.
Not her. A lot of them do. A majority of the other ones do. Yeah. And they're like,
I know.
Was there no scruples in the early 90s?
There was too much cocaine for scruples. Come on.
Well, had it been the 80s, things would have been very different.
There would have been more cocaine, yes. The next day, Devo is riding in the delivery truck with Joey, and Joey asks Devo, so, why are you always hanging out with Rosalie? Devo explains, because I like her. Joey agrees. Oh, yeah. Rosalie is a great woman. Devo rolls his eyes. That's surprising. Joey defends himself. Of course I think she's great. I'm married to her. So I look at other women. I am a man, after all. I can't help myself, and it doesn't hurt her, right? You totally can't help yourself, right? Right?
Yeah, it's all that testosterone coursing through his body that he can't control.
Mm-hmm. That just makes his dick get hard and, like, penetrate other women. Right. Yeah.
Because if it didn't come out there, it'd probably, like, have to squirt out somewhere, like his eyes from looking at women or something. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's just, like, some sort of release valve is needed. I'll ask Larry. See what he thinks.
I don't know. I think if you use a hand on said unit, you can create your own personal release valve, is what I'm saying.
I feel so bad for Rosalie, because, like, yeah, she doesn't want to get it on because they have responsibility. So while he's out clubbing it and screwing everything that moves, she's doing their taxes and paperwork and taking care of the kids. No wonder why fucking this jackass, like, worships the ground that she walks on, because she does fucking everything for him.
Mm-hmm. I thought you were going to say, like, I seriously thought you were going to say, not seriously on your part, but I seriously, on my part, thought you were going to say, I feel so bad for Joey. The fact that he might have to masturbate instead of have sex with other women.
Oh, I know. The horror. The horror.
I know. I know.
But as we learned in the movie, I Love You, Man.
Yes.
He's got the condoms that help elongate the masturbation session if he decides to go that route.
Right, right, right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, prolongs the masturbation session. Yes.
You just need the wanker chair with the lotion next to it and you're good to go.
Maybe he has that in his toolbox.
Who knows what else is in that toolbox?
Mm-hmm. Not the fun kind of tools, I'll tell you that.
So Joey pronounces that what Rosalie doesn't know won't hurt her. So I look at other women. I am a man, after all. I can't help myself. And it doesn't hurt her. And I say, excuse me? I think you mispronounced sleep around with lots of women. And I doubt she'd be thrilled about the fact that you're sticking your dick into anyone with breasts and a heartbeat. Just saying is all.
But he loves her, Corinne, because he uses condoms. So he's not bringing anything home.
Oh, okay. He's saving his jizz stick just for her. Mm-hmm. That's so sweet. But I digress. Joey pauses a beat and then asks, are you moving in on my woman? Devo protests, no, of course not. And I think Devo mispronounced, hells yeah, I'm moving in on her. You don't deserve her.
This is the one thing I was a little bit disappointed about. When I saw Tracy Ullman, I got so excited. Because I'm like, oh my God, she's hilarious. I remember her on the Tracy Ullman show. Mm-hmm. And she was not in a comedic role. Like, it was kind of a funny sort of movie, but
yeah,
she was kind of just playing it straight the whole time. And I was like, aw, come on, Tracy, let your funny freak flag fly.
I was a little bit relieved because the Tracy Ullman show actually doesn't really age all that well.
Oh, I know. But she was very talented in it.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, I agree. So later, Devo is out in the alley talking with a biker, a man who was in prison with his brother, when Rosalie enters the alley to throw out the trash. No, gentle listeners, they aren't throwing Joey into the dumpster, although they should.
Shucks!
I know. The biker rides off and Rosalie waxes nostalgic about how her first boyfriend, Rocco, drove a motorcycle. Devo ponders, maybe I should get a motorcycle. And Rosalie encourages him. Yeah, it'll drive the girls crazy. And Devo immediately has visions of a revved up Rosalie on the back of his bike. But alas, I don't think it was meant to be. Devo asks, what happened to Rocco? And Rosalie matter-of-factly states, Joey happened. He said, hey, beautiful, what are you doing with that jerk? As soon as I saw Joey, I knew he was the one. I do what I feel. So he used the same line on her that he used on Phoebe Cates in the bar. Nice. Nice.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Am I right? Am I right?
Yeah. Devo bitterly responds, you must have been feeling suicidal. And she banters back, shut up. Someday you're going to find yourself a wonderful woman and you're going to drive her crazy with your big motorcycle. Devo looks over at her. I found myself another woman, but she's married. Rosalie chuckles. Silly, you're good for my ego. Now go out and find someone your own age. Just then, their conversation is interrupted by a cute young blonde woman who approaches the duo asking if Joey is around. Rosalie explains, sorry, he's not here. I'm his wife. Can I help you? A slight look of surprise flashes across her face, but she quickly regains her composure and says, I met him in the bowling alley last week. He was out having fun bowling while you were taking care of the children because he's a man and he needs to recreate because he worked so hard, unlike you, who just sits around on her tush eating bonbons, right?
Of course. Yes, absolutely.
She met him at the bowling alley last week and he said he may have a room for rent. Rosalie gamely nods. Oh, yeah, he's at the apartments right now. Devo adds, fixing the pipes. Winky, winky. And Rosalie offers to take the young woman, whose name is Bridget, up to the apartments.
Bridget.
Aww.
Bridget. Just like Corinne's sister.
Mm-hmm.
They walk over to the building, and Devo is apparently done fixing the pipes because he runs into them at the entryway. Now it's his turn to have a look of surprise flash across his face. Hey, Bridget, what are you doing here? And when he finds out she's interested in an apartment, he says, I'm sorry, I can't show you anything today. Maybe tomorrow? Bridget agrees to come back later, and when Rosalie questions why he wouldn't show her the room, he explains, I'm busy. What am I, Superman? Sure, Jan, you're Superman. Just then, a different blonde woman than the two we've previously seen pokes her head out of the second floor apartment window, calling out, Joey, you forgot your hat! Dropping it out the window and into his hands. So far, he's fixed the plumbing of four different women, and damn, that's a lot of pipe to be laying in a few days. As we stated before, the man is Superman, but just not in the way that Rosalie was talking about.
Mm-hmm. Not the hero we need, I will say that.
Mm-hmm. Joey and Rosalie walk arm in arm back to the pizza place while Joey distracts her by telling her what a wonderful wife she is. Rosalie complains that she can't ever get him to fix anything around the house, and he quips back, how can I? Your mother beats me to it. She fixes everything. She's part woman, part wrench. And then we cut to later in the week. The kids are in school, the pizza place isn't open yet, and Rosalie drops by the library. She returns several books and then begins browsing the stacks when she hears Joey's distinctive voice a few rows over. Rosalie peers between the shelves and spies Joey with yet another blonde, but this time she sees him kiss this woman, grab her ass, and suggest they go back to her place.
Ooh.
Rosalie's floored. She's always known Joey was a flirt, but she didn't think he was doing the bed dance with other people. The realization that it's all been a lie causes her to leave the library crying. She goes home, yells at herself in the mirror in the bathroom for being so gullible. Or maybe she's in the restaurant bathroom because the tile is nasty. Yeah. But the medicine cabinet is very complete for a restaurant restroom. So we're all confused.
Very confused.
Then she tries to overdose on aspirin. But unfortunately, the 8 aspirin she took does not do the trick. So she has a heart-to-heart with her mom.
Mama Nadia, played by epic British actress Joan Plowright, lives with the family and has a highly contentious relationship with Joey. She initially suggests that Rosalie get a divorce, but Rosalie immediately vetoes that. What, so I can see him move in with another woman? No, thank you. I'd rather see him dead first. Mom agrees. Yes, he's a bastard. Kid, that was bad.
Banner accents in this episode, Corinne.
Oh my God.
Banner.
Yes, he's a bastard. Yes, he's a bastard. Always leaving his wet towels everywhere. He deserves to die. You know, I know someone who could do it for you, a real nice guy. Once Joey's dead, you can begin to live.
Rosalie ponders, but what if I get caught? Mama Nadia wisely chastises her.
Oh, Rosalie, in America, people get killed left and right. Nobody gets in trouble. It'll be fine.
Are you on board with that statement?
Did I put it in your part of the notes, too?
No.
Your outline?
No.
Okay, because I was writing notes in the outline, and I'm like, ah, shit. I didn't fucking make a copy, so it's not showing up on Corinne's version, too. I wrote, this part made me laugh because of how Mama sold the hit. She said she knew a good boy, and then Rosalie asks if he's a killer, and Mama says, no, not a real killer. He only does it for money. It's like, ah, huh? And it is America. People do get killed left and right. Sadly, more so now than ever. Don't go to any public gatherings. Oh, all the gun violence. You can't go anywhere these days without, you know, wondering.
Yeah.
Rosalie gives the go-ahead, so later that night, Mama Nadia meets with a guy who lives in a little camper trailer and bribes him with baked goods. Because nothing says, hey, will you do a murder for me like brownies and muffins, right?
No. Peanut butter cookies are what say murder to me.
Oh,
it's all about what baked goods you put out there.
Mm-hmm. And anaphylactic shock. Agreed.
Mm.
Initially, the man turns her down. I don't know. These aren't peanut butter cookies. And I haven't done anything like this in a long time. But Mama Nadia pulls on the guilt strings.
I know you're a good boy. Please do this for me. And he agrees. I'll do it for you in honor of your friendship with my grandmother. I'll take him out.
So, after Joey parks his car at home, after a typical night out partying, he walks towards the house when a shadowy figure in an Abraham Lincoln mask tries to attack him with a baseball bat. But Joey wrestles the baseball bat away from him, and the guy runs off, yelling, "Wrong house!" He obviously didn't know about the sock trick on the end of the baseball bat.
The what?
If you put a sock on the end of a baseball bat and you try using a weapon, when the person tries to grab the baseball bat to take it from you, the sock will slip off and you still have the weapons. Ha! Smashy, smashy! Bam, bam! Bam, bam, bam!
Mama Nadja went to the wrong person. She should have solicited murder from Corinne.
Yeah.
And then the movie would have ended right here.
Gentle listeners, I am not a good person to solicit murder from because I am actually not interested in going to the jail place. Just an FYI. Joey enters the house and lets Rosalie and Mama Nadia know what happened. They call the police, and a detective that frequents their pizza place takes the report on what happened. And while the detective is there, Joey orders around Rosalie. Very charming.
Rosalie, make the detective some coffee.
When the detective turns that down because coffee makes him jittery, Joey still asserts his authority.
Rosalie, make the detective bacon and eggs.
Each time, Rosalie gets up quickly from the table to follow his orders and then sits down because the detective refuses his hospitality.
Because she's the woman. She needs to make the food.
Mm-hmm.
Even though she works full-time right alongside him. What? God. Once the report is taken and Joey sees the detective out to his car, Rosalie and her mom take out some trash and talk in the alley next to their house. Rosalie criticizes Mama's choice of weapon, saying, "A baseball bat? Is murder a national pastime?" And Mama admits, "Baseball bats are cheaper than guns." Rosalie cries, "Was Abe Lincoln cheaper than George Washington, Ma? I don't like this. We can't do it anymore." But Mama Nadja isn't having it. "Don't you worry, Rosalie. This time I'll take care of him myself."
Mm.
So, late that night, while Joey's upstairs in the bedroom looking in the mirror and waving a gun around, saying menacingly, "Stick him up! Stick him up, Abraham Lincoln! How's your baseball treating you now?" Mama Nadja, who can fix almost anything, goes out to Joey's precious Lincoln Continental and fiddles under the roof of his car. The next morning, Joey heads to work. Well, Mama Nadja gleefully does a dance and waves bye-bye from behind a curtain. He usually goes on his own, but this morning, Rosalie is going with him. Mama Nadja spies them getting into the car together and hustles out the door. "Wait! Wait! Wait!" she yells, grabbing the car door and refusing to let Joey close it. Joey's confused. "What?" But Mama Nadja says, "Rosalie doesn't usually go to work with you." Joey's irritated. "Yeah, but she's going to work with me now." Today.
See, you can do Mama Nadia and I can do Joey. And
I know.
We can't do the other.
I know we can't. And I cannot switch my accents up.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my Lord.
You and me both. Because I'm like, she's sounding like, yeah. I should just have you read Mama Nadia parts in my script.
Oh, my God. Yeah, but she's going to work with me today. Mama Nadia responds, okay, but I need Rosalie at the house right now to help me clean. As she makes eye contact with Rosalie and indicates with her eyes towards the steering wheel, a realization quickly dawns on Rosalie. But before she can hot-foot it out of the car, Joey dismisses her protest, saying, too bad, she's going to work with me today. He turns the ignition key and both Mama Nadia and Rosalie yell, ah, and jerk away. But the only thing that happens is the car starts up and Joey gives them a what the fuck is the matter with you look before he drives off. Crisis averted.
Ooh.
Later, Rosalie's hanging out with Mama Nadia in the garage while Mama works on unbombing the car. Mama confesses, I don't know what happened. I run a wire from distributor cap to spark plug and gas tank. I thought the car would go boom. Bye-bye, Joey. Rosalie protests. Joey shouldn't die that way. That's a terrible way to die. There's gotta be a way to do it in a kinder, gentler way. Mama Nadia says, okay, I'll think about it. Oh, Mama. I know you're Yugoslavian, but since Joey tells us about its close proximity to Italy, I believe you should have seen the epic film The Godfather, where Michael Corleone's new bride gets in a car, starts it, and dies from a car bomb that was meant for him. You have a daughter and grandchildren in the house. You should have been way more careful, Mama Nadia. Mm. I'm just saying.
That evening, Mama Nadia and Rosalie gather in the kitchen to mix up a very special batch of spaghetti. The secret ingredient? Sleeping pills. Two whole bottles. They make the sauce extra spicy to cover up the taste. And while Joey sits in the living room watching a war movie, Rosalie tucks a napkin around his neck and hands him a heaping bowl of spaghetti. She nicely tries sprinkling Parmesan cheese over the top, but he pushes her hand away as it's blocking the view of the tube. Fuck off, Joey. Seriously?
Right. Yeah.
He sucks down the pasta and goes back for a second heaping bowl, exclaiming, best spaghetti ever. Nice and spicy, just like my mom made. He then sucks that down with a couple of bottles of beer and gets a third bowl. As Mama Nadia and Rosalie wait for the sleeping pills to do the trick, they talk outside. Mama Nadia muses, I wonder how long it'll take. Rosalie frets, I don't know, Mama Nadia. Joey's not human. He works 14-hour days, goes out and parties, and only sleeps 2 to 3 hours a night. He's like some kind of animal. I don't think I gave him enough sleeping pills. Joey pops out into the backyard. He'd previously had a stomach ache and exclaims, Rosalie, I feel better now. All I needed to do was take a massive shit. He obviously... I'm like, Tamara... And now I feel like you and Joey do have a little bit in common.
Hey, 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 hey. Just because my Pavlovian response is to take a poop right before we record our podcast, that's the only similarity I have with this man.
And you have a stomach of steel.
Oh, yeah, that too.
Yeah, yeah, that too.
That's what I asked Larry. Because we went to this Asian market over the weekend, Sunday. And they had like a little deli counter, but they sold Chinese food.
Sure.
So we got ribs and Kung Pao chicken and just like a 2-item combo with the side of ribs. And it was sitting in there for a while. And I saw it this morning and I was like, oh. And I usually like to have like a little protein with my salad because I make a salad every day for lunch. And so he called me and I was eating the food and I picked up the rib that was left over. And I was like, hey, do you think this is still good, Larry? And he's like, for me or for you? What do you mean by that? He goes, if it was me, I would say no. But since it's you, I think you're okay.
Sunday to Wednesday, totally fine. But yes.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Thank you. I'm still in the safe zone.
Yeah, you're very much in the safe zone. Yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And I'm conservative in regards to safe zones. So, yes.
Thank you. I know you're listening to this, Larry. So, ha!
Joey's obviously affected by the pills as he initially misses the lamppost when he tries to lean on it, but he's also feeling really good. cut to him sitting on the porch swing, flanked by Rosalie's mom on one side and Rosalie on the other, which they look so uncomfortable.
And he looks so oblivious.
Yes. He rocks them back and forth singing, "Non dimenticare means don't forget you are my darling." He demands, "Come on, you aren't singing." As both women look nonplussed, waiting for him to fall the fuck asleep. Thank you very much. They begrudgingly sing along. "Don't forget to be. Don't forget to be. All you mean to me. All you mean to me." He lets a giant fart rip, which prompts both women to leave him on the porch swing. They pause a beat and they're like, and Rosalie's like, She beats down there and Mama Nadia follows toot sweet behind. You think he'd curl up on the porch swing at that point and go to sleep, but instead he goes back into the house and pulls out Monopoly. Fuck that game, Monopoly. It's like he knows that they're trying to poison him and he's like torturing them for it, even though he doesn't. After they finish the game, he eats more pasta and watches a monster truck rally on the TV, finally passing out into a bowl of spaghetti, snoring loudly and farting. Aww. Mama Nadia enters the room and points Joey's gun at him, but Rosalie shuts that shit down. Still, Mama Nadia is on a mission, so she has another solution. Ideas?
She's going to take his face that is sitting sideways in the bowl of pasta and just turn it slightly so that he drowns in the red sauce.
Ooh, that's a great idea.
Right?
Yes. Make it look like an accident.
Or the one thing that I think they should have done this whole time is write a suicide note and then say that he committed suicide from the sleeping pills.
Right. Yes.
But surprise, surprise, he doesn't die from the sleeping pills.
Oh, no. This fucker is resilient. And we'll find out what that solution is after the break.
And we're back. And what could that solution possibly be? Mama Nadia calls up Devo, asking him if he truly loves Rosalie and would do anything for her. He sincerely vows, "I love Rosalie and would do anything for her." Nadia asks, "Anything?" Devo assures her, "Anything." Mama Nadia says, "Okay, I need you to do a favor for her. Come over to the house and I'll tell you what it is." So, of course, Devo gets over there right quick. Rosalie and Mama Nadia rope him into carrying Joey upstairs to the bedroom and then flop him onto the bed. And then Mama Nadia real nonchalantly hands Devo the gun. Rosalie frets, "I have to go. I can't stay here and watch." But Devo stops her protesting. "What are you talking about? I need your support. I can't do this without you." But Rosalie is beside herself and rushes out of the room, with Mama Nadia following closely behind. Oh, those two women of steel. They head outside into the night, clutch each other and wait, and wait, and wait, until finally they hear a shot. Rosalie rushes back inside asking, "Devo, are you all right?" And he is not all right. He's losing his shit and cries, "Why are you asking me if I'm all right? I'm not the one who got shot." Rosalie and Nadia look at Joey's body on the bed, but the only thing closely resembling blood on him is the pasta sauce smeared on the side of his head from his face plant earlier into his dinner. Nadia, confused, asks Devo, "Didn't you shoot him?" And he sheepishly explains, "Well, I think I did. I closed my eyes at the last moment because I couldn't watch." Rosalie inspects her husband more closely and does indeed find some blood and a bullet hole in his head. She pushes her head against his chest to see if he has a heartbeat while exclaiming, "Oh, Joey, Joey, oh, Joey." She doesn't expect an answer from him, so she practically jumps out of her skin when he blearily says, "What, Rosalie, why don't you let me sleep? I've got a little headache and my stomach don't feel too hot either." Rosalie, in a panic, consoles Joey by lying through her teeth. She coos, "Oh, honey, it's okay. You have a virus. But don't worry, the doctor was here and he gave you a shot."
A shot to the head.
Yeah, we're not going to be real specific about what kind of shot it was, Joey, so just go with the story, okay? Okay.
Dr. Devo.
Dr. Devo with his magic shot. Joey doesn't even remember the doctor, but it seems to make sense. So he asks for a glass of water and goes back to sleep. The murder-fail trio head back downstairs, where Mom and Rosalie try to convince Devo to shoot Joey again, but he refuses. The women squabble that they need professional help now, while Devo shuts himself in the laundry room to gather his thoughts. He's only in there for a few moments before popping back out and saying, "Okay, I think I know someone. How much money can you pay?" Rosalie says, "Whatever he wants." And Mama Nadja follows up with, "But not too much. See if you can get a discount."
So Devo dons a disguise, trades his reggae beret for a fedora, his hippie vest for a silky baseball jacket, puts on a fake mustache, a very stringy, long mustache, and a pair of glasses, and drives to a bar that is in the shape of a teapot. In real life, it's Bob's Java Jive at 2102 South Tacoma Way, Washington. He approaches the bartender, asking in a low voice,
"Is there a Harlan James here?"
The bartender eyes him and says, "In the back, Devo." Question. How convincing was Devo's disguise?
Oh, not very.
No. I know. Mm-mm. I was like, that there is River Phoenix. I see him shining through the fake mustache, the glasses, and the fedora.
Yes. Yes, 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 yes.
Devo is surprised. He can't believe his disguise didn't work. But he heads in the back anyways, where he encounters Harlan, played by William Hurt, with the probably longest hair that he's ever had in his entire career, and his cousin Marlon, played by Keanu Reeves. Harlan and Marlon both look wasted. And Harlan has long, blonde hair. Better watch out, Joey might get interested in him. While Marlon's hair has a patchy shave job on the side and is long on top. Devo offers them $300 to kill Joey. Why only $300? Because he's already partway dead anyways. They just need to finish him off.
Easy peasy.
That would not be a convincing argument for me. I'm just saying.
He's almost halfway dead, so you only get like half price. The last half is the most important half, though, I might argue.
Yeah, exactly. The last half is the half that's going to really get you in trouble. Mm-hmm. Harlan counteroffers, and they eventually settle on $500 after Marlon points out, "If we're going to waste the dude, we have a right to make a living. That's the American way." And Harlan agrees, "Yeah, we're not communists, dude." Mm-hmm. Harlan and Marlon arrive to the house in a cab, and after underpaying the cab driver, they wander off in the wrong direction. Devo calls out to the duo, "Psst, guys, over here!" The guys spacely wander towards Devo's voice, and once everyone is inside of Joey and Rosalie's house, Devo bawls them out for taking a cab. They blankly look at him.
"What? We got here, didn't we?"
Devo tries explaining why taking a cab to the scene of a crime is a bad idea, but it's lost on them. Completely lost on them. Meanwhile, Rosalie and Mama Nadja are assessing Harlan and Marlon and aren't impressed at the drugged out duo. Shocker. If these two showed up to your house to like commit a murder for you, what would your thoughts be?
Oh my God. My dad probably met you at a bar.
Which means they're like really kind of nice, but harmless. And
yeah. They have the aura of danger, but you know, they're not going to pull through.
No,
you know, it's just an aura and you could just blow it away.
Yeah. Mama Nadja nervously offers them food, extending a half eaten peanut butter and jelly sandwich in her hands to them. They do not take her up on her offer.
Yeah, because they're not your normal company. You don't have to try as hard.
If you're like, "Would you like something to eat?" and you hand me like this kind of somewhat mushed PB&J with like a few bites out of it, I'd be like, "Thanks." Now, if I were really hungry, I would still eat it. But I know you.
Yes. Yes. But then you'd be like, "I expect better from you, Tamara."
But give me a sandwich.
Yes. You can at least cut it in half so I don't see the bite marks.
Yeah, we can share it. You get the bitten part. I'll get the rest. Harlan does, however, take Joey's gun. He inspects it, saying, "Oh, it's a .22. This doesn't have much pop to it." He then looks at the lady, saying, "Okay, I'm going to need you to put on some music real loud to cover up the noise of the gun. Devo, take notes." And Harlan and Marlin head up to the bedroom. Marlin grabs a baseball bat that he saw along the way. At the top of the stairs, Harlan asks, "What's that for?" Marlin swings the bat around, narrowly missing Harlan. And he replies, "A baseball bat, you know, just in case he wakes up." Harlan nods approvingly and they head into the room.
And it should be noted that that baseball bat also does not have a sock on it.
No, also does not get used as a baseball bat to hit balls with, nor, I might say, spoiler alert, used as a very effective murder weapon. But I might be wrong.
Once upstairs, Harlan points the gun at Joey, but Marlin stops him. "I've never killed anyone before." And Harlan agrees. "Yeah, neither have I, but he's already half dead." They both kind of acknowledge us and sit on the edge of the bed, waiting to hear the loud music. The loud music, which should be playing, but Mom and Nadja insist on Johnny Mathis and can't seem to find the record. Joey rolls over in bed and mumbles, "Rosalie." And H&M, that stands for Harlan and Marlin, spring up from the bed. Harlan initially points his finger like a gun towards me.
I gave you the funniest part.
No. Harlan initially pointing his finger like a gun towards Joey and then grabbing the actual gun and pointing it. And Marlin jumps on the bed, holding the bat in front of him in case the half-conscious Joey gets feisty. But he doesn't. Joey's out of it. Marlin's bat distracts Harlan, although it doesn't take much to distract either of them. And he says, "Whoa, that bat is a Reggie Jackson model." Marlin's impressed. "Really?" He sees the signature and the duo starts chanting excitedly. "Reggie, Reggie, Reggie, Reggie." Harlan places the gun on top of the sleeping Joey and takes the bat from Marlin, striking a batter's pose with it and asking, "How many homers did he hit in his lifetime?" Marlin excitedly states, "I love Reggie," but is stumped and answers, "Fuck a bunch." 563, in case you're wondering. Mama Nadja downstairs still can't find the music, and ultimately H&M move on from the Reggie Jackson Rhapsody to Hanging Loose. They're lying in bed on either side of Joey, Harlan sitting up twirling the gun on his finger, banner idea, and Marlin lying next to Joey reading the Bible. Finally, Harlan gets bored. "Fuck it! I'm gonna kill him! I'm gonna shoot him in the heart!" But he can't figure out which side Joey's heart is on. Marlin, sounding a whole hell of a lot like Ted Theodore Logan, a.k.a. Ted and Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, blurts out excitedly, "Wait, school, man. What about the Pledge of Allegiance?" They both slap their right hands over their chest, individually doing a very confusing rendition of the Pledge of Allegiance, which is a mashup of "My Country, 'Tis of Thee," with a little "Spacious Skies and Amber Waves of Liberty to All." Marlin finishes his pledge with "Deliver us from freedom." And Harlan waves the gun uncertainly over Joey's chest, but not before Marlin ducks out because he's too chicken to watch. Mama Nadja's downstairs and has finally found a record to put on when Rosalie and Nadja hear the shot. And Mama Nadja drops the needle onto the record, suddenly playing Yugoslavian folk music and doing a little dance until Rosalie picks the needle up off the record, chastising her mom, saying, "You needed to put the music on before the shot." But Mama retorts, "Yeah, well, he shoots fast."
Reggie, Reggie, Reggie.
Oh, I love how the people who are supposed to murder the guy get distracted by a baseball bat and very excited about Reggie Jackson. I just had to throw in his home run record because you might be curious.
The more you know. Bing.
Harlan and Marlin come downstairs pronouncing, "He's dead." Harlan states, "I shot him." And Rosalie starts to cry. She collapses on the couch in a sobbing heap. And Mama Nadja puts a blanket over her and then brings Devo, Harlan, and Marlin into the kitchen for a drink. Rosalie, bawling her eyes out, heads over to the Jesus shrine on the mantle, praying, "Oh God, I didn't mean it. Please bring Joey back. I don't want him to die." She sobs a bit more and then hears a voice behind her. Rosalie, what are you doing? I just have the flu. I'm not gonna die. And there is Joey, looking kind of corpse-like, with a bullet hole in the side of his head and one in his chest. Is he the second coming? Jesus having the stone rolled from his burial cave? Is this Easter? The answer to all of this is a resounding no. However, the quartet that's in the kitchen hearing the noise leaves the kitchen and goes back out into the living room where they witness Joey, still very much alive, but looking a little worse for wear. Mama Nadia asks, Joey, what are you doing up? And he explains, I heard a noise, firecrackers, I think. It woke me up. Joey glances at the guests in his house and says to his wife, Rosalie, we have guests. Why aren't they eating? Why haven't you fixed them food? Rosalie says tearily, they're not hungry. They don't want anything to eat. Joey staggers towards the guests, saying, do I know everybody? The quartet moves backwards away from Joey, Harlan hitting his head on some lights in the foyer. Joey shakes the would-be murderer's hands, and Marlin introduces himself as William, I'm William Brown. And Harlan introduces himself as Louis James. No, Louis Smith. Joey introduces himself as Joey's Pizza and looks blearily into Harlan's eyes, offering some cheese and crackers. And he smiles eerily at him. Harlan asks Joey, you feeling all right? Joey responds, thank you. His eyes kind of roll back in his head, and it looks for a moment like he'll collapse. But he regains his composure, asking, what? Harlan repeats himself, you feeling okay? Joey reflects, I got a hell of a virus. And Rosalie prompts him, you should be in bed. She gently guides Joey up the stairs, and everyone looks at his retreating figure and the clear exit wound out the back of his pajamas.
This shit is bananas. B-A-N-A-S. First of all, can we just harken back to the early 90s when people actually liked people to stop by their house unexpectedly and they're like, hey, do you want something to eat? Do you want some coffee? Do you want some cheese and crackers? Not, why the fuck didn't you call me before you showed up? Oh, and I so just like Rosalie. Love-hate relationship with her husband. Like, she still keeps trying to kill him, but every time she thinks he's close to death, she bawls her eyes out.
Mm-hmm.
Or talks to Jesus, or a little bit of both.
I mean, but that's kind of how it is. Like, for most
of the time... How many people have you killed?
No, I don't mean that. But when you're in a relationship with someone, and it gets to the point where you feel like you need to break up or something like that, it sucks. You're, like, ready to move on, but there's also sadness there, you know, and she's mm-hmm. doing it. She's just taking it next level. She's just taking it up a notch to the next level.
Mm. Rosalie also takes her husband into the bedroom and he comments how nice his attempted murderers are. She gets him to lie down and he asks for meatballs because one tends to feel a mite peckish after getting shot twice and drugged with two bottles of sleeping pills. But what one really wants after getting shot twice and drugged with two bottles of sleeping pills is, Joey gestures down at his nether region saying, Rosalie, and pointing meaningfully. What one really wants is a blowy, right? Right?
No.
Rosalie tells him to go to sleep. Meanwhile, downstairs, Devo plays Harlan and Marlin $200. Harlan protests, we were promised $500. But Devo pushes back, yeah, for killing him, and you didn't kill him. So for wounding him, too. And Mama Nadja says, I'm so disappointed in you boys. Harlan replies, you wanted me to shoot him, so I shot him. And Mama suffers no fools and hands Harlan his baseball cap, stating, you woke him up, what good is that? She opens the door for the dynamic, not-so-murdery duo. And Harlan and Marlin take a moment to whisper into each other's ears. Marlin says to Nadja, okay. And the twosome head out the door, but only after Harlan lags behind and gives some meaningful, disgruntled hair flips, because that's the only time he's going to have long hair and he has to make it work. Once they're outside, Harlan says to Marlin, next time we do this, will get paid in advance. The more you know. Marlon responds, if we keep shooting Joey, don't you think he might get suspicious? And they walk off in opposite directions. One goes one way and the other one goes straight. And they don't realize it till God knows when. Later, at the police precinct, Officer Wiley informs Detective Larry that they have an informant that wants to make a deal. The detective is the same one that took Joey's report earlier, and the informant, after some prompting, says, oh yeah, Harlan and Marlon was buying drinks for everyone. They were bragging that they were paid $5,000 to kill Joey Boca. $5,000. So, Officer Wiley and Detective Larry head over to the Boca residence. It's awfully late, but the lights are on inside, so they ring the doorbell and knock on the door. Rosalie is going to answer, but Devo grabs her and plants his head on her chest, mumbling, I don't want anything to happen to you. Rosalie breaks away and calmly answers the door, saying, hi, officers. Is everything okay? Detective Larry and his partner explain, we'd like to see Joey. Rosalie feigns confusion. Joey? Detective Larry presses, yes, Joey, your husband? At first, Rosalie and Mama Nadja try to put them off, but the detective threatens to come back with a warrant, so they lead him upstairs to see Joey. The room is dark, the covers are pulled over Joey's chest, and if you don't look too closely, you can't see the blood stain on the pillow behind his head. The detective stands in front of him and asks, hey, Joey, how you doing? Joey opens his eyes blearily. Larry? What are you doing here? Rosalie explains that he has the virus, so he's kind of out of it. And Larry asks Joey, can I turn on the light? And Joey says, sure, I don't mind. Rosalie tries deterring him, but the light gets turned on, and Larry takes a close look at Joey's head, ultimately finding the bullet hole and exclaiming, Jesus, what the hell's going on here? Rosalie asks, what's wrong? And Larry explains, he's been shot in the head. Rosalie and Nadja gasp in surprise, and Devo says, really? And Joey groggily says, what? Mama Nadja explains, no wonder he has a headache.
That was like one of my favorite lines.
Larry responds, headache? He's got a bullet in him. He orders Officer Wiley to get an ambulance while Devo tries sneaking out the door, but Larry stops him. Devo, who softly responds, I was just going to go get a Band-Aid for Joey. Larry gestures him over, and the trio begin babbling guiltily. Rosalie, thinking on her feet, says, we didn't do it. We found him on the lawn, and we brought him inside. It must have been the mafia. Larry asks them, why didn't you take him to the hospital? And Rosalie replies, he didn't want to go. Larry leans over to Joey and asks him, you didn't want to go to the hospital? To which Joey protests, no, why? Why would I go for a virus?
Second favorite line, I was going to go get a Band-Aids.
No, right? That's a mighty big Band-Aid that you need there, Devo.
Uh-huh. The ambulance comes and Joey gets rushed into surgery where they find a bullet lodged in his head, his chest wound and back wound, as well as copious amounts of spaghetti and sleeping pills. At the police station, Harlan, Marlon, Devo, Rosalie, and a very happy Mama Nadja all get their mugshots taken. During the police interviews, Harlan and Marlon both say that Devo shot Joey the first time. But when Rosalie is interviewed, she takes responsibility for the sleeping pills and shooting Joey once and tells them Harlan shot Joey the second time. Rosalie declares, Mama and Devo had nothing to do with this. When Mama Nadja is interviewed, she claims she poisoned and shot Joey because he's a no good son of a bitch. She declares, I did everything. Sleeping pills, shooting, everything. Rosalie was begging me to stop. I am her mother. I do what I like. Rosalie had nothing to do with it. They say, I thought Devo shot him the first time. Mama Nadja holds firm. No, Devo is a very nice boy. He wouldn't shoot nobody. Devo was apparently the only person to lawyer up with a lawyer that has 3 diamond stud earrings in one ear, which unusual for that point in time.
Yeah.
An interesting choice, and Devo, much to the detective's chagrin, only admits that it was possible that he shot Joey, not that he did. Still, Harlan, Marlon, Mama Nadja, Rosalie, and Devo are all arrested. At the hospital, Lacey, the initial woman we saw Joey sleep with, fix her plumbing, she visits Joey, giving him a kiss on the lips. Joey, half aware, mumbles, "Rosalie." But when he comes to, he realizes that Lacey is in the room with him. Lacey is very excited for their future together, but Joey explains, "I'm sorry, Lacey, but we gotta knock it off. When you get shot in the head, it makes you think, and I realize that I need to take my marriage more seriously and stop messing around." Lacey tries throwing Rosalie under the bus. "But she shot you twice." Joey refutes this. "She never shot me herself, per se." Lacey scoffs. "What about us?" Joey states again. "It's all over now. I already told you, I love my wife." Suddenly, an older woman barges into the room, exclaiming, "Joey, who is this woman?" Joey says, "Mama, this is Lacey. She's a friend of mine." But Joey's mama is not having it. "You need to leave. My Joey needs his rest." Lacey says, "I was just leaving." Joey's mom states, "Good, just leave. You aren't his wife. Go." Lacey turns to Joey, kisses him on the cheek, and says softly, "See you later, Joey." As soon as Lacey leaves, Joey's imposing mama, played by the epic British actress Miriam Margolyes, sits down next to Joey. She is a solid woman with a big bust, wearing a worn-out... speaking of mink stole...
Oh my God, again.
It all comes around.
What? It all comes back around.
She says to Joey, "I saw Rosalie today." Joey asks cautiously, "Oh yeah, what did she say?" And Joey's mom begins whacking him on the head. "She told me everything. What are you doing? Cheating on your wife." Joey fends off his mom, clasping his bandaged head. "Hey, Mom, I got a bullet in my head." She continues to whack him on the head, stating, "You should have 2 bullets. In your head, 3 bullets, 4 bullets. She is squarely on Rosalie's side and determined to knock some sense literally into her son. I love that she's on Rosalie's side and she's not like, "My baby, my poor baby boy." Yeah. Joey begs, "Mama, please, I'm sorry." Mama narrows her eyes and points at him. "You don't tell me you're sorry. You tell Rosalie. Otherwise, I'll make sure you really have something to be sorry about." Joey agrees. "See, yes, Mama, you are so right." She gives him a final whack on the back of the head and then gives him a sympathetic hug before pushing him off the hospital bed. Apparently, his mama takes no shit.
Yeah. He already got shot twice, so would she shoot him again, the 3 and the 4 times? Like,
I think she would do a more effective job, I will tell you that.
Yeah, she'd get more than a 22.
Yeah, and she would get a nice life insurance policy on him so that Rosalie and the kids would be taken care of.
Once Joey's out of the hospital, he inexplicably has all of his hair because apparently in the 90s when they did major surgery for a bullet in the head, they only shaved the teeniest, tiniest circle around the wound to fix it.
I think they probably just left the bullet in there.
Oh, you think so?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wouldn't they still want to shave it to get a good look at it? Like, he's got like a Band-Aid on his head. Devo could have done better. Anyways, he meets with the police and explains that while he initially wanted to prosecute his wife when he was in the hospital, and I'm guessing before his mama knocks some sense into him, he no longer wants to press charges and has bailed Devo, Harlan, Marlon, everyone involved, out of jail. Devo is the first to be released, and Rosalie and Joey's 2 kids are thrilled to see him. Harlan and Marlon come out next and awkwardly exchange a few words with Joey, made even more awkward by the fact that Marlon asks, "Who's he?" And after some prompting, still doesn't remember until he does. They tell Joey not to take it personally, that they didn't know him, but now that they're friends, there's no way they'd lay a hand on him. The duo heads out to the waiting area, Harlan walking through the open door and Marlon smacking into the one that's closed behind because, you know, Marlon. Devo goes up to Joey and apologizes, but Joey takes it all in stride. "I should have listened to you. Tried to tell me. Just no more shooting me in the head, okay?" Devo jokes. "Why not? It seemed to have helped." And Joey sincerely responds, "Seriously, I've never felt better." The doors buzz and Rosalie and Mama Nadja come out. Rosalie's 2 kids rush towards her and the threesome happily hugs. Mama Nadja looks at Joey, who is standing there with a box of chocolates in one hand and a bouquet of roses in the other, and she asks him, "So, What do you want? Joey sincerely apologizes to Mama. I'm sorry I treat your daughter so bad I broke my marriage vows, but I don't break nothing ever again, I swear. Mama Nadja eyes the box of chocolates. And this, for me, candy? This candy? Joey stammers, well, sure. Mama Nadja grabs the chocolates and says, thank you, you're a very good boy. You know I liked you once, maybe I like you again. Except chocolate is not my favorite. She jabs at the box of chocolates she snatched. I like hard candies. Joey tries to grab Rosalie's chocolates back, but Mama Nadja brings them closer to her body, and Joey relents. I'll remember for the future. Mama Nadja pulls the kids away, promising them some candy too, so that Rosalie and Joey can have a moment alone. And as soon as they're gone, Joey hands Rosalie the flowers and says, I want you to marry me again. New marriage, new life. We'll have a big ceremony. She whacks him on the head with the bouquet of flowers. We're not even divorced yet, and you want to marry me? She starts storming off towards the kids, but he quickly pulls her into the janitor's closet so they can have a more private conversation and explains, you saved my life. All those sleeping pills slowed down my bleeding. I would have died otherwise. I love you, Rosalie, and I'm a changed man. Rosalie is still pissed, though. You cheated on me for all those years. Why should I believe you? And he states, because you shot me. When I woke up in the hospital and I found out what happened, I thought to myself, this woman, she loves me to death. She loves me so much she'd rather kill me than see me with another woman. She's ready to go to prison for me. That's all I needed to feel your passion, to know you still love me like a man. They hug tightly and he continues to whisper in her ear, not like your husband, like a man. Rosalie pulls back and slaps him in the face. You are my husband and you should be proud of it. I'm your wife and I'm proud of it. He agrees with her promises never to cheat on her again, and he declares they're destined to be together. They kiss passionately, and Devo, who is listening outside the door, realizes that he's lost Rosalie forever. Aww. He moves towards Mama Nadja, asking her, do you think Joey can be faithful? And she says, anything is possible. He brought me these chocolates. She pops the chocolate into her mouth and Devo asks, but what if he isn't? And Mama Nadja, with a twinkle in her eye, says, then we shoot him again. She waits a beat and then says, just kidding. The end.
Yay!
Oh my goodness. Corinne, how many dry kisses do you give I love you to death?
Okay, first, we will run down our kiss rating. One kiss, do not watch. Two kiss, if you only had three channels, you might watch it for a while before changing to an infomercial and then inadvertently buy yourselves knives and then feel guilty, particularly when they don't cut a can as advertised. So many regrets. Three kisses, yay, would kiss this movie again. Four kisses, date night you've been waiting for. Five kisses, if this movie were life, you'd have gotten dressed by cute cartoon animals, some squirrels immaculately washed your dishes, and you rode to work on a motherfucking unicorn. Or when I was writing the script for this movie, I kinda not super happy about it, because I kept on having to write about violence happening towards somebody, and I was like, this isn't funny. But then I read the script when I was splitting it out, and I was like, oh no, this is funny. And so I give this three dark kisses, if for no other reason that the beloved, blessed River Phoenix is in it. And I thought he did a lovely job. Actually, I thought everybody, this was a fucking star-studded cast, ridiculous cast. I enjoyed it in hindsight. It was hard to watch while I was watching it. Were you ready for the wild ride that was this movie, Tam?
I told you how many times I, while watching it, was like, what the fuck am I watching?
How many dry kisses do you give I love you today?
I enjoyed pieces of it. This is tough because there are those moments that you're like, ha ha. And it was enjoyable in some moments, but I don't think I'll ever watch this movie again. So
no.
I'm going to say 2 3/4 dry kisses, because I'm not mad that I watched it, but I don't think I'll ever watch it again. Tracy Ullman, I expected her to be one way and she was completely not. And then she didn't exercise her comedic chops.
Mm-hmm.
And then she was like inexplicably like upset and inconsolable when her husband was dead, but then kept trying to kill him when he was still alive. I did enjoy Mama Nadja, and I did enjoy seeing Keanu Reeves early on in his career. Most definitely. But
I thought he did a great job. Keanu Reeves, like,
uh-huh.
He played drugged out guy, and not like stoner Bill and Ted guy, but like just, you know.
He kind of had those Bill and Ted chops. I'm like, I could see little glimmers of Bill and Ted
absolutely
in his performance. So yeah, I'm going to give it 2 3/4 dry kisses.
Are we going to do the 4 Musketeers of Diversity?
Oh, yeah. You go ahead.
Body diversity.
No.
I mean, okay. Joan Plowright and so Mama Nadia and Joey's mom, definitely.
Yeah, but that's like the matronly, like, oh, it's okay.
Yeah,
it was kind of playing into a trope that, No.
Sexual diversity. No. No.
Unless those two detectives had something going on that we weren't aware of.
Racial diversity. Oh, yeah. We got Italians.
Oh, hell no. Hell no. No. No, Corinne, no. Because it's like all the white people playing all the ethnicities that they are more than likely not. You're like famed British actor who's playing an Italian mama.
Yeah.
A wonderful actress who's playing an Italian mama. Like,
Yugoslavian mama. Yeah. No.
Yeah. No. And Kevin Kline with all the bronzer and an Italian accent for Jesus.
Yeah. That Italian accent was bad. It was bad, bad.
It was almost as bad as ours. Almost as bad as ours.
That's your "It's a me, a Mario" accent, right?
It's a me, a Mario. Yes. That's where I pulled inspiration for my Italian accent, and obviously where Kevin Kline also pulled inspiration for his Italian accent.
Okay, and then disability representation.
No.
I feel like Kevin Kline, you know, Joey was highly disabled individual. He was disabled by his penis, you see.
Ah, okay. Well, then conversely, then Harlan and Marlon were disabled by their drug use because it made them stupid.
Yeah, so I agree with you. No, so there are no musketeers at the table.
None. Nope, they tried, but we're like, yeah, no, you can't just put on your musketeer face and pretend like you're a musketeer. It's not going to work.
Yeah.
So now we're going to grab from our grab bag of, we say spin the bottle or grab bag. It could be either or. Every week it changes and we don't care. From the wild card grab bag. And Corinne's going to pull the first topic this week, which is going to be...
Sometimes I feel like somebody's watching me. Who would you develop
an unhealthy... A.K.A. who would you develop an unhealthy obsession over?
Yes.
I feel strongly about this one, Corinne. I would develop an unhealthy, and did for a while, with the young Mr. Keanu Reeves.
Oh, so the drugged out, half-shaved head.
No, the hair wasn't doing it for me, but you could see, like, it was almost like a Julia Roberts moment where I was like, oh, he's going to do something and be something when you saw him. And I got some serious Bill and Ted vibes from him in this movie, mm-hmm. and I loved him in Bill and Ted because I was the right age to watch it at the time it came out, not because it's a great movie.
It's a good movie.
Yeah. It was fun seeing him in this role, and I think he did a really good job. And then he kind of, like, carried that persona for a little while in his career, so he was always kind of the dupey, clueless,
what?
Reggie. Guy. Yeah.
Marlon. Yeah. So Marlon is who you would develop.
Not Marlon per se. More the Keanu Reeves side of Marlon. Not Marlon as he is in the movie.
The
person playing
Marlon. Oh, this is supposed to be within the context of this movie.
Well, he played him and he was in this movie. It counts.
Okay.
Okay, fine. Then if it's not Keanu Reeves, because I can't say it, I don't want to say Marlon, I'd be like Mama Nadia, because she'd fucking kill for her family.
She's badass. She's like really awesome and interesting. I agree. If it's not Mama Nadia, it's Harlan.
He flips that glorious hair so well.
He does. And like, there's times where you're like, yeah, he's just totally wasted, and like, is he even there? Reggie Reggie. But then he's like, he takes a look at the gun. He's like, oh, this is 22. Like his voice like literally switches from stoner to just like, no, this is a 22. This is just, you know, like not an effective gun to use. It's a little pea shooter. You know, he has knowledge. He has hidden depths, I felt like, to him.
Right. We need to make money. We're not communists. After they murder him. Oh, okay. That's right. Yeah.
And that's fine if you don't want to go out on a double date with me, Harlan, and you, Marlon. But, you know.
Okay, but we're talking about the real people that are actually in the movie. They're probably either very sober with families and grandkids or dead. Because if they didn't get help, they'd be
yes,
dead by now.
Yes, yes.
Theoretically.
Yes.
Now for the second grab bag topic, we're gonna pull from our magic bag. I'm pulling it, and the second topic is the alternate movie title. Corinne, if this wasn't called I Love You to Death, what would be a fitting title for it?
Okay, I've got two.
All right.
Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Oops, I Killed You Again.
Yes.
And the second one is Devoted to Rosalie.
What is it?
Devoted to Rosalie. Devoted to Rosalie.
Because he was the main part of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
At least in Corinne's eyes. We all know where she stands.
It was all about River Phoenix. And his character, though, was so milquetoast, I wouldn't have wanted to date him in this movie. He was a very nice guy, though. But he had all the sexual appeal of a, I don't know, a teddy bear.
Of a rune. A runestone.
Yeah. Yes. That's more accurate. He had all the sexual appeal of a runestone, and maybe he would make me some soundscapes, and I'd be like, no.
Wow. My alternate title is Marriage, Manicotti, and Manslaughter.
Ooh, manslaughter, though. It's got to be murder. Manslaughter is accidental killing.
Well, they messed up enough times.
Okay. I'm on board.
Manslaughter sounds more menacing than murder. If you just think of it, manslaughter. Murder. Manslaughter. Murder. See? Sounds better.
Murder is just so cute and quaint.
You're not allowed to critique my title.
So, Tam, what movie do we have coming up next week?
Next week, we have Adam's Rib.
Oh, such great, exciting court cases. What is going to happen next? We do not know. If you have anything you'd like to say about court cases or I Love You to Death or River Phoenix or River Phoenix again or River Phoenix a third time, you can write to us via email at onedrykiss@gmail.com or on the social medias, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, all at One Dry Kiss.
And that's one spelled O-N-E. And as always, if you can find the time to rate or review us anywhere you listen to this podcast, we'd greatly appreciate it. But in the meantime, we'd like to thank you for stopping by, and we bid you adieu with one dry kiss. Mwah! We'll see you next time.
See you next time.
Oh, I've never even heard of this movie.
You never heard it? So. River Phoenix? Hello? If there's a movie that comes out with River Phoenix in it, you are obligated to see said movie.
Okay, sure.
None.
See, I fell into that trap a long time ago when you gave me that ultimatum when we watched Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, and River Phoenix was in all of like the first 7 minutes.
Oh, but it was a hot 7 minutes. Are you kidding me? That was like River Phoenix's hottest role ever as young Indy.
Oh, well.
Here's the thing is that I don't know. My brain, it just, poof, it went away. My amazingly funny thought just went away.
Do you want to hold on a few seconds to see if it comes back?
Hold on for one more day and things go your way.
Hold on. Somebody's listening to gangster rap in the alleyway. Keep moving, buddy. Keep it moving. Nobody wants to hear it. Yemen. Cut that, Corinne.
I'm planning on it. Thank you. Yes. What would I do without your guidance?
Oh, I just farted. That's why I said it.
Oh, you farted. Oh, okay.
That was my alarm.
Reggie, Reggie, Reggie.